One, two.
Damn you, old man, wait.
Damn you, old man!
Fuck your old.
Damn it, Wade.
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show, the inaugural Old Man Wade Show. And the best part about it is I got one of my bestest buddies in here to do the inaugural. Oops, I'm not even recording.
Remember to hit record.
Yeah, this is just funny. All right, let's try that again. I'm going to see if I can work this. The audio sounds really loud on my end.
Can I just say how much I love that line about he's so old, his podcast is on a cassette? That's genius. That's
my friend's like audio. That was him. That was actually his voice doing that.
That is amazing. Kudos to him.
I actually, when I first heard that, I was like, oh, that's hilarious. All right, hold on. And let's try it again.
Damn you, old man, Wade.
Damn you, old man.
Wait. Old ass man. Fuck your old.
Damn it, Wade.
And I actually remembered to hit record this time. And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, Old Man Wade, the inaugural Old Man Wade podcast episode. And the best part about it is I got one of my bestest buddies in here to kick this off the right way. What's even better about this is he's been podcasting for, what, 2.5 years now?
Sure. That sounds about right. I don't know. That's a really good question.
For the Wednesday, a comic book podcast, he's been doing it for a while. He's been hosting for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think since I'm going to do this, I should probably get one of the professionals out here to help me do this. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Hey, everybody. My name is Paul. As Mark, as you heard in his very generous introduction, I'm a host at Wednesday, a comic podcast that we host on chronospeakeasy.com. And after you check out this episode, if you got the time, check us out on iTunes. Wednesday, a comic book podcast.
Tell them how to spell chronospeakeasy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Kronos, like Kronos. You know, probably somebody use a Kronos card to log in at work as Kronos, and then Speakeasy. So Kronos, and then speakeasy.com.
Boom. There you go. Or you can find them on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere you want to go find a podcast, or just go to the Google search engine and type in Kronos Speakeasy, and then hit Wednesday Podcast. Boom. You got it right there.
Bickety bam, that easy.
So, what is the Old Man Wade Show? We are a politic free podcast, unless something insane happens, and then we'll discuss it in a short amount of time because I really don't want to talk about that guy. I want to have fun. I want to talk about some things that are that are fun for people. I also want to talk about some things that are that are near and dear to people. Some issues that people have, whether it be race, whether it be sexual preference, whether it just be emotional. Speaking of emotions, my buddy here, Paul, thought it would be a good idea for the first thing for the inaugural podcast would be to talk about something that a lot of people have an issue talking about or even understanding, and that's mental health. Mm-hmm. So, for me, in the black community, mental health is not something a lot of people talk about. They figure, you should be able just to, either not really internalize it, but, find a way to deal with it without actually having to, get the help you need. And for years, way into my adult life, I internalized it. I was, in some ways still am, a very angry guy. So I didn't know how to do anything about it. I started going to therapy, and immediately even after my first appointment, it was to take a title from a book, Atlas Shrugged. All of that weight was just right off my shoulder, not realizing that not only did I not need it, that it was a weight I was carrying and didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously, as your white correspondent, I can't speak too much of how, the mental health is perceived in the black community, but just based on my experiences, it seems like it's stigmatized just all across the board. There's this, I don't know. Like, I mean, the moment here, mental health, or that you're seeking therapy, people are like, they jump to conclusions like you've a split personality disorder, or you're a delicate sunflower who can't cope with, the realities of the real world. I mean, I had the worst time seeking out therapy because I actually was trying to vocalize it and talk to family and friends. And And, you know, growing up in Southie, I think it's sort of a similar ballpark to where you're coming from, Mark, where, especially if you're a man, it's almost like frowned upon that you want to seek out therapy. Like, what are you talking about? You're fine. Like, you got a roof over your head, you got food on the table, the hell are you depressed about? And I think that's what people don't understand, especially when it comes to depression, is that it's having everything, but still feeling like you have nothing. You know, I mean, you can see, yeah, you know, I have my health and I have work, but why isn't it enough? Like, it's almost like you're walking through this gray tent over your eyes where you can't acknowledge the sun. It was always hard for me to try to reach out and talk to people about it because people just didn't get it.
Well, I agree. You hit on something when they said, like, you're a guy and you're automatically supposed to just be like, get over it. I was watching this thing on a little quick documentary on some of the songs Jay-Z did for his new 444. And one of the things was he's like, you're a guy, you're supposed to man up. And one of the guys is like, well, does that mean I'm not supposed to have emotions? Right. Like, if you prick me, do I not bleed? Really, we're men. Men do fall in love. Like, despite mm-hmm. what people think, we do fall in love. Not even just with our wives. We love our family. We love our friends. We love our children. We have these emotions. We're not cavemen. We're not just running around angry, clubbing women on the back of the head because we find them attractive. When men usually settle down and they fall in love, it's an emotional thing. I remember when I got married. I remember watching my wife walk down the aisle. Before my wife walked down the aisle, my friend Lavelle, was my best man, was like, he goes, "You okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good." And all day he kept asking me, "Are you good?" And I didn't get why he was asking. Then my wife walked around the corner, and I tensed up, and he leaned down into my ear and goes, "Are you okay now?" But you know what I mean? What the stigma is, we're supposed to be stone cold. We're supposed to be we're supposed to be bulletproof. When it comes to our emotions, and if you do show emotions or anything like that, you're considered almost weak.
Oh yeah, totally weak. I mean, you're not allowed to show any kind of emotion. It's you had mentioned about men falling in love. Well, newsflash: men can get their heart broken, and if at any point in time you express that you're having trouble getting over someone, you're weak, you're emo, you're gay. I grew up with a lot of that because I'm a pretty sensitive guy. It sucked when, you could never cry. It's a sign of weakness. And it's I'd rather, cry than, punch through a plate of glass. You know what I mean? At least it's – I feel like crying is a healthy expression of your emotions.
I agree, and from a guy who used to punch walls, and I actually had multiple boxing fractures from punching lockers and broken thumbs and shit like that, and all I ended up with is a doctor telling me that I'm gonna have early on when you can't squeeze something early on not Alzheimer's I forget what it's called. I'm having.
I'm thinking too. I think having trouble squeezing something. I'm like, you can't masturbate.
Well, one thing I am a guy. I'll figure out how to masturbate. That much is a given. I forget what it's called, but my doctor said, I'm gonna end up not being able to squeeze things like I should be able to because
a form of arthritis or
arthritis. There we go. We have early on arthritis from mm-hmm. punching walls and punching studs and walls and lockers and just like that. Right. When I understand the point where there's a time and a place to cry and I get all that and you know what I mean, but to tell a guy he's not allowed to feel these emotions is insane. And then what happens is when these emotions are balled up and then they end up in this angry ball of rage, then it's oh, you couldn't control your emotions. So it's wait. Either I can't have emotions or I can. There can't be any in between with what I'm saying like that.
Right. And the problem with that is that, you know, you're making the problem worse. It's like you're nurturing the issue in, like, in all of the wrong ways. So now what has become a problem of either sadness or depression is now being morphed into something else. It becomes a bigger, uglier monster, and it's because of, you know, the society, I'm sorry, the corner that society can push you in. Because I think, you know, you put all this pressure on someone who has to be strong and level-headed and put together, so you're instilling the feeling of, well, there's something wrong with me, you know, I don't fit in. And I think that kind of leads to frustration, resentment for the people around you, and just a lot of anger. And I can say that because I've walked that path. I mean, you know, growing up in Southie, there's a certain, like I don't know, like check marks you have to make for, like, being a man. And I didn't fit any of that. So automatically, I was gay because, you know, I really was into sports. You know, I wanted to be a writer. And because I was so, you know, emotional and very vocal about how I felt, those were all looked as weaknesses. And it took me the longest time to figure out, like, man, you know, those are things worth celebrating. And I don't think that, you know, there needs to be a bigger, better, positive light to shine on those feelings and emotions, because it doesn't make you different, it just makes you human.
Yeah, like one of the things they tell you, like, you're supposed to have emotions. Like, when one of the first things they teach you in school are about emotions: happy, sad, angry, you know, things like that. Now, I was one of those guys. I played a lot of basketball when I grew up, and I stopped for a little while because it wasn't really my thing. My father kept pushing me, you gotta play, and I'm like, yeah, I like playing basketball, and I didn't really love it until he stopped pushing me. But I also was a guy who played basketball, but I was also the same guy who played basketball, but then go to the Museum of Fine Arts. I would play basketball, but I was reading comic books. I was drawing. I was writing a little bit here and there. So it was for a lot of people, like, it was, and then it makes it like you don't know how to categorize somebody. Right. Like, you know, like, well, he's not a jock. Well, he's not a jock because, you know, he was in a drama club. Oh, he's not a jock because he sang in a church choir. Oh, but he did play basketball. He does watch wrestling. Like, you know what I mean? He does lift weights. He is a powerhouse. But, like, you know what I mean? But then it was the stigma of, I'm crazy because I would bottle all this emotion in because I didn't know how to let it out. And then someone would say something to me, and then I'd, you know, flip the fuck out. So, you know, it honestly wasn't until, like, I met my now wife, who said, you know, if we're going to be together, you're going to have to get help. You're going to have to get your shit together. You're going to have to go talk to someone. You're going to have to do more than just go there for an hour and then feel good for the day. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to go there for that hour, well, excuse me, the 45-minute hour, and then, and then come back out. Like, some actual, like, you know, resolution or some goals to actually work on. So, like, you know, so these things don't happen again. Because for a while, I was, like I said, I was going to therapy for a while, and I was getting weekly fix, you know what I mean? Like, I'd leave, I'd feel good, I'd be okay for a couple of days, and then I would lose it for the next four, and then on the seventh day, I'd go back to therapy, repeat cycle.
Right.
And I'm thinking I'm okay, and so one day I realized I'm not okay when I'm in a hospital, because I tried to, like, you know, I tried to slip my wrist from fucking wrist to elbow. And, like, you know what I mean? And it's funny because even then, like, I didn't see what the big deal was. And sometimes it takes something so extreme for you to realize what's going on. And then I'm in this place, and it was like, you know, and I was in this place in a hospital with my best friend and again, my now wife. And they asked me these questions. He's like, are you fine? And I want to go, yeah, I'm fine. Like, and I'm like, no, you're not fine. Like, they literally have guards making sure you don't jump out of this hospital bed and go escape in a assless gurney, you know. So, you know, but you know what, it's funny and it's not, but my rock bottom came after that. It wasn't a slitting of the wrist, it wasn't even going to the hospital, it wasn't even, like, bleeding down the street, it wasn't even seeing a guy I used to play basketball with, telling him I need an ambulance. That wasn't even rock bottom for me was when they sent me to the hospital. I didn't even have my clothes yet because they hadn't sent for them. I'm in this gurney in my boxers, sitting in the waiting room with some other person who's also waiting there. They're fully clothed, and they're like, oh, I'm just, you know, I just felt I needed to go before I got too late. And here I am, like, you know, basically my back out, sitting there going, oh, yeah, I think this might be the right place.
And in a lot of ways, I think those moments, as you know, intense and heartbreaking as they can be, they're almost, I think, in some ways, little miracles, because it was sort of, I think, the light that kind of showed you the path again. You know, I think sometimes sometimes I think you have to hit rock bottom, because, you know, because from there you can only go up.
Yeah, and what is it like? Are they called like an alcoholic's like your moment of clarity? Mm-hmm. Like you said, like rock bottom, and then here comes what makes it even what's hard in that. With then after you hit rock bottom, the challenge is actually getting back up,
and
getting to the place where you want to be. So actually sitting there and actually acknowledging that, like, I need to get to these, I need to go to these classes, I need to go to actually pay attention and actually like be involved, not just sit in this class and go, well, you guys can't hold me for another on the fifth day I can check myself out. I checked myself in 5 days. What if I've learned absolutely nothing? So actually getting in there and saying, after I was released, they were like, you know, what more do you want? I'm like, are you all set? I'm like, no, I need time to like figure these things out. So going to the DBT classes and actually like, you know, and realize like seeing how bad it could get. Like for some people, they think that like, you know, like the self-harm and all this other stuff, that's like your rock bottom. But then realizing like how much worse it can get if this anger that like, you know, the anger or whatever emotions we have isn't let out, like it can get worse. It can lead to drugs. It can lead to like, you know, it can lead to like an actual suicide. It can mm-hmm. you push away your family, push away your friends, and like, and those are the people that really that are rooting for you, that you're pushing the people away who actually want to help you, as opposed to pushing away like the emotions that are actually like, you know, pushing them away.
Right. Yeah, and you bring up a really good point about, you know, about going to therapy and then sort of, but kind of, you know, catching yourself in the cycle, because I've had friends who've gone to therapy and they feel like, well, you know, I went once and it didn't do anything. I'm like, well, listen, it's not like going to like a mechanic and, you know, getting your engine fixed. Like it takes time. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, you get out what you put in. And it took me a few years of therapy to figure that out. That, you know, like it wasn't just, well, I can't just use these sessions as a crutch. Like I actually have to put in the work. Like I gotta do the things that my therapist tells me to do. And you know, because you know, for me, you know, the what I got from therapy was the tools to deal with, you know, because I have anxiety and depression, so I was learning tools on how to, you know, handle the situation when they arise. Because, you know, if I'm having a panic attack at work, I can't drop everything and go see my therapist. Like I gotta work through that shit then and there. So I was trying to make more of an effort to, you know, to participate as much as I could in therapy, so that I could apply those tools, you know, in my everyday life. And I think, you know, once I was, and again, you gotta be honest with your therapist too, which I wasn't in the beginning. So, you know, once you lay all the cards on the table, then they can really help you. I mean, just and it's scary, because, you know, there are things that I hate talking about, because then I have to relive these moments. But it's like you have to crawl through the muck and the broken glass to get to the peaceful side. Like it's like it feels like you're tearing those wounds reopen, but you know they'll heal better for it. And that's something that, you know, I can say with experience. And I hope that whoever is listening, that if you're facing any kind of, you know, events like this, like power through it. Like, I mean, you have to, and it's easier said than done, but you really have to find a way to be your own champion. Like, because I'm so used to, I basically train myself to believe that I'm no good. I'm not worthy of anybody's time, affection, or love. And you get caught in the cycle where that becomes your reality. Like that's as real as the grass being green and the sky blue. So it took me a while to kind of build up my own defense and be like, no, that's bullshit. Like that's my ego talking. That's all past experiences. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not 100%, but I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not this worthless creature that like my ego is making me out to be. And that's definitely an uphill battle, but it's doable. Like the victory, like, is there waiting for you. Like I guarantee it.
So I have a question, because a lot of people don't know what what anxiety is, and I want to get this out. But one thing, if anyone's listening to this and you have a friend or a close one who's dealing with depression, do not say the following phrase: "Can't you just be happy?"
Ugh, I hate that.
No, motherfucker, I cannot just be happy. If I could just be happy, I wouldn't have these problems. Or what was the one you said to me yesterday?
Well, there's one I hate where someone says, oh, it's all in your head. Like, oh, okay, so I'm crazy. Like, that's what it is. Like, oh, so if I just, oh, it's in my head. Thank you. All this time, I was just incepting myself. Got it. Okay, great. Thank you. Like, I mean, it's like, yeah, I know it's in my head. But that's not, but and a lot of times that's what would cause my anxiety, because I would, you know, I would get nervous about something and I feel like consciously, like, hey, we're not dying, we're okay, but the rest of my body, like my heartbeat and like, you know, getting shortness of breath, it's like there's a war inside of you. And like when those two sides can't reconcile, that's when the anxiety flares up for me. And it's tough to describe what exactly anxiety is. I mean, it's, my therapist explained it in a very interesting way, that mankind, or, you know, humankind, try as PC as possible, you know, it evolved, you know, from a time where there was danger around us 24/7. Not that that hasn't changed now, but the dangers are different. We're not being chased by giant predators. And, you know, even though some of these circumstances, these dangers are no longer applicable to us, the mechanism that's designed to detect that hasn't left. So a lot of times you're just amped up, like it's like fight or flight, but there's nothing to run from or nothing to fight. You know, it's just like you're just always like on the lookout. Like, and for those who, you know, are listening, I'm basically Steve Rogers before the serum, just to give you an idea of, you know, just my physical physique. So it was interesting when my therapist said, you know, hundreds of years ago, like, you would have been a force to be reckoned with. Like you are a survivor. And I'm like, really? He's like, oh, yeah, you're the one who's, like, setting the traps. Like, you're the one who's, like, got plans for A, B, C, D. Like, you're thinking out all the situations. So, you know, you may not be the biggest cat in the jungle, but, you know, you'd be one of the smartest. And apparently there's a correlation between IQ and anxiety, because, you know, your mind is designed to think out all of these scenarios, which is what I do, I think, 90% of my day. I think of all the ways that something can go wrong, and I try to, like, have an answer for it. Like, well, you know, I keep a hammer under my bed because if somebody breaks in the night, like, I'm ready. And then if they get the hammer, I go to the closet. I get the baseball bat. If they get the baseball bat, I get the Uzi under the sink. And, you know, like, it just, this is how my mind works. So a lot of times it's like, you know, you're looking for danger when there isn't any. And the other thing, too, I think a lot of people don't know about is that anxiety and depression go hand in hand. And sometimes it can be like a cycle. Like, you get so depressed about your anxiety and you get sad thinking, oh, shit, well, when's the anxiety, you know, gonna hit? And then you get anxious and, you know, and then it's just this weird cycle. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's weird and it sucks. But if you have someone in your life who's suffering from anxiety and depression, the best thing you can do is just be there. Like, you don't have to say anything. I know when I talk to some people, they're like, I don't know what to say. It's like, we don't need you to say anything. Like, you know, at this point, I mean, I'm 32 years old. When anxiety hits, I know I'm going to get through it. I just have to ride it out. It's just nice knowing that somebody's there, like, rubbing my back. You know, like, you know, it just, I mean, you, honestly, you don't have to say anything. I think it's just nice knowing that, like, for me, what always was a comfort is knowing that someone's there that doesn't have to know what I'm going through, but knowing that, like, I'm kind of going through a shitty moment, but, like, hey, man, I'm here. Like, that's, I think it's all I have to say. I'm here for you, and that's it.
I agree. I used to tell a buddy of mine, Fletchmo, like, when he knew I was most of my time, he would always just go, what you need? What do you need? I go, normalcy. I just need normalcy at this point in time right now. I just need someone to actually talk to me like a normal person and I just need to act like for 5 minutes that whatever I'm going through right now, I'm not going through right now. So He'd make a stupid joke, I'd make a stupid joke, and next thing I know, 20 minutes later, I'm good.
Right.
Like, you know, like, and like I said, I don't need, like, I'm different. Like, when I'm in those moods, I don't really, it's, I'm kind of like, yeah. You ever seen, what's that movie with Ryan Reynolds, when the house was all spooky and whatnot?
Oh, the Amityville Horror?
Amityville Horror. Do you remember the scene in that movie? He's like, yeah, don't touch me. That's what, like, when I'm depressed and I get in those moods, I'm like him. I'm like, don't touch me. Can't you go somewhere else?
Yeah.
And when you're living with someone, you know what I mean? Especially someone who loves you, it's kind of weird to like, you know, feel that way. But and I'm trying to, like, get out of that. So now, instead of saying, like, you know, don't touch me, it's kind of like I try my best to maybe get closer. I try to. It doesn't always work. But I try to get closer. I try to be more aware of it. And it's difficult sometimes, like, you know what I mean? But over the last couple of weeks, this is week three now, like, my diet, I've changed my diet completely. I'm not eating steak and cheese subs and hamburgers every day. Like, I've been eating none but salads for my lunch for the last 2 weeks in a day. So that's, you know what I mean? So, and I've actually noticed, like, that helps my mood.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, well, if, you know, I have to change, so, like, okay, so if I'm going to keep this up, I have to change my lifestyle. So that includes, like, my eating habits. When I drop the weight, I'll be going back to the gym, and I'll start doing things that, like, you know, make me feel better. Like, and especially, it's a great time, because for those people who don't know, when you're depressed, like, being out in the sun actually helps you replenish those
vitamin D.
Vitamin D. Serotonin.
Sure.
Serotonin. Because melatonin is the stuff you take that puts you to sleep. So I think it's serotonin. Right. It replenishes the vitamin D, like, you know, helps with your mood and, you know, blah blah blah. Science.
Right.
And like, you know, just going out and doing stuff like that helps. But some people don't want to do what. But honestly, like, a lot of times when you're depressed, you don't want to go outside. You want to sit in the corner. You want to sit in a dark room. And you want to be left alone, which is counterproductive.
But here's what you do. Get a light box and a treadmill. So at least, like, the light box, and they're great during the winter if you have seasonal depression. Get a light box and then run in front of it. At least you're getting exercise and you're getting some form of, like, sunlight that's going to help, you know, with that vitamin D there. I mean, just to echo what you said, I mean, working out is key to fight, you know, to combating anxiety and depression.
Especially, like, if you're exercising, you can actually start seeing, like, results. Like, you know, if you go from, like, 300 to 290, and then, like, maybe a few months later you're down to 250, you start looking at results. You start looking at old pictures going, oh, my God. Like, and it's this feeling of accomplishment. You're like, you know, you start feeling good and things like that. So, like, it's a lot more – depression and, like, mental health is a lot more complex than, like, people make it out to be. And then what makes it even worse, that it's really difficult to actually get in there and actually have someone see you. I have friends who had to go – who had to jump through hoops just to get their first therapy appointment. And, like, one hospital is like, oh, we can't see you until 6 months. And then come to find out that that hospital might not have been doing the work they needed to, because he got an appointment in, like, a month and a half. So it's almost like the help is out there for you, but it's like right out there for you to reach it, but you just can't grab it.
Yeah, it's definitely not a perfect system, and I definitely worry about how the system is going to develop. I mean, I know you say you didn't want to talk politics. I'm just going to say that with, you know, under President Fuckface, I just don't know.
You know what? I think that actually might be his name from here on in. It might be I might just call him PFF, President Fuckface.
I mean, I'm scared. I'm hoping, the Affordable Health Care Act, you know, wins out. But you know, here's a true story. The therapist I was working with for the past about 6 months, she actually left the hospital that I worked in because she was so afraid about, you know, what was going to happen with the healthcare system, that she just didn't feel there's any kind of stable ground beneath her. So I think she just kind of went off and started doing, like, a private practice type thing. But yeah, but she, like, up and left the hospital, which is a shame, you know. So it's like, so I'm definitely kind of feeling the effects of, you know, this
presence. Well, yeah, and already, because, and it's like, and it's every day you have to worry about things like that. It's like what's next? Like, you know, that's the thing about anxiety. Like, one of the things, and I don't think I have anxiety. I've never been diagnosed or anything like that. But let me not say I get it, but I understand. You know what I mean? Like, always thinking, like, always waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, you know what I mean? What's going on? You're like, all right, it's great outside, it's sunny, and I gotta know. Then you're like, fuck, should I have a rotten umbrella? But even things like more major, just like, you know, like it's like a chain reaction of, like, A plus B equals C, but you're already thinking, like, E. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So And I can actually understand what your therapist meant by, like, you know, like back in the day, like you would have been the, like the cream of the crop. We would have been going to you, like Jennifer Paul. The Redcoats are coming, and we need a plan. We need a plan. What should we do? We can't send Mark. He's a brute. He's just gonna run over there and just start hitting stuff. And I'm sitting there in the corner, just like shining like a mallet. Like, yep.
Oh my god, that must be some mallet that you gotta shine. I see you shining like a sword or like an axe, but you're shining a mallet. That's pretty dangerous.
Oh no, I honestly see myself carrying like a war axe. Like, I always felt like Marv in Sin City.
Yeah, well.
The guys back in the Greek days, they would have thrown women like that, like her at him.
I mean, I think I think it's true of a lot of, you know, men that I know and speak with and are friends with who feel like, you know, they would have thrived in a very different point in our history. You know, so sometimes, like, you know, you talk to them and they'll say that they kind of feel like that they're a man out of time, so to speak.
Yeah, it's funny. I'd have been the one person, like, I'd have been with Caesar and I'd have been like, send in the brutes, and I would have came out and would have been killing lions. Like, I'm so sorry. Just like, still would have been killing people. People would have been cheering. I'd be sitting there covered in blood, crying. Like, I didn't want to do this.
See, I would be the guy in the trees wearing camouflage and a bow and arrow with like bear traps around the tree. So either if I don't kill you from a distance, the traps near the tree will. And I'm in camouflage, so you can't see me. Like, that's what I would be doing.
Like, just keep coming close, keep coming close, and bear trap.
Yep. And arrow through the eye.
Oh no! Even better, the one with the pits with the spikes in it, with the grass cut.
Mm-hmm. Ouchies.
You look at, and then you hit him with an arrow.
Just to be thorough, because that's what my anxiety does. Make sure they're dead. Actually, cut off their head just to be super sure.
And then the lava. You gotta. What was it? The Mongolians used. Was it hot, like a vat of hot oil or something like
oh,
that?
Oh god, yeah. Oh, good times. I forgot what I was gonna say about anxiety, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely a form of survival. And I think, and you know, just kind of go back to what we were talking about with, like, you know, this imperfect system. There's definitely been steps forward, like for where I work. Because I've been there for a year, I just supplied some paperwork to my HR, and they decided that, well, based on your anxiety, you know, and based off of these notes from your doctor, it's clear that when you have an episode, you cannot work, and we can't discriminate against that. So you have 2 days a month that you can use for anxiety. That's not from your vacation or from your sick day. This is like your anxiety time slot, which is great. And I haven't had to use it too much because a lot of times when I have the anxiety, there's the fear of, like, oh, I'm not good enough. My manager thinks that I'm not working, that I'm faking. So while having an anxiety attack and knowing that, hey, I can leave here guilt-free, not affecting my vacation or sick time, is like such a nice, like, weight off my shoulders.
Dude, that's awesome. Like, and it's actually cool that you have a job that'll actually, like, recognize that you're not, like, you're not, this isn't a joke. Like, this is something that, you know, you do. And when you say to someone, like, there's a guy, one of my buddies I work with, and I told him, like, you know, I called out, I needed a day. He understood. Like, you know what I mean? Because he knows that, like, when I say, like, I need a mental health day, dude, I'm not coming in here today. He gets it. But then you have some people who just say it, and it's like, you know, which makes it harder for people who actually have issues to take these mental health days. And it's a sad, unfortunate thing, and, you know, it's true. But I wish more jobs actually recognize this. And the sad part about it is they won't recognize something like that until it's something personal. And then it's like, oh, so when Paul or Mark or whoever were actually saying that they needed this day, they'll look at the symptoms and look at how they were working, how things were going. And you see the, like, the up and down, like, you know, of effort of work, and they go, oh, so they weren't kidding when they said they needed this. Like, when I took my time off, I told the DBT director, that that's what she's called, that I had to go back to work. She goes, you can't go back to work. You still have 2 more weeks of this program. And I go, well, my job said I had to go. My boss said I had to go back. And so she goes, what's your job number? So I called her. I gave her my job number, excuse me. And she called my manager to pick up the phone. And she goes, hi, this is blah, blah, blah from blah, blah, blah. Just to let you know, Mark Lynch has 2 more weeks of this class to finish. If you have an issue with that, you are more than welcome to call me here. But just to let you know, this is a medical thing. I have his insurance, and he has 2 more weeks of 2 more weeks of paid time off full time, with 100% pay. And if you try not to, we will get in. We will contact his. We will contact our lawyers, and we will sue the hell out of you. Thank you, and hung up the phone.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah. Later, come to find out, the reason my manager was doing it was actually because he was being nice. He wanted to make – he was – because I don't want to talk about my people, but someone put a bug in his ear to make sure that this was a serious thing and that I wasn't just like goofing – like, you know, I wasn't goofing off. Not right. Because of me in general, but he wanted to make sure that like when he went to his boss, he could say, here's the documentation mm-hmm. that he did, blah, blah, blah. Because he knows me well enough to know that I'm not going to like, you know, screw around, joke around with something like that, especially with something that's serious. And kudos for him for actually keeping, like, you know, the word was going on because no one else knew I was gone. They just thought I was gone. I broke my hand. And when I got back, he didn't ask me what happened. I just came back. He was like, are you okay? I said, I'm okay. And he was like, all right. And that was the end of it. So it's a gift when you have management who actually, you know, take into consideration the fact that these are things that we actually go through. These are things that it's real. Mm-hmm. This is an actual thing. I don't know if it's happening more now, or if maybe more people are actually stepping up and actually saying that they have these issues. But it's definitely a thing.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, I recently started. Well, maybe not too recently. Maybe the past, I don't know, a year. I've been posting on Facebook about my anxiety, and it's not for attention. I do it because, excuse me, I try to break the stigma, you know. So I don't. I mean, I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I feel like when I'm going through something, it's so obvious. And I feel like, and I'll make a post while I'm having an anxiety attack, and it helps because I feel like I'm sort of like wrestling it out of my mind. And when it's out there in the world, like I can see what the fear was, and it minimizes it. And since then, people that I've been friends with or people I haven't spoken to in years have private messaged me and be like, hey, I suffer this too. What do you do? What medications do you take? And it's, you know, and I'm so glad I did that because now I'm kind of creating like a, you know, almost like a little support group on Facebook, you know, and I'll check in to see how they're doing because, you know, they're facing a similar struggle. But I hope in time that it becomes something that people can talk about because, I mean, there's a reason why it's called an invisible illness. You know, it may not be something that you can see, you know, like a wound, but it's definitely there and it eats away at you. And I know for me at work, you can't really hide an anxiety attack. So my manager sits next to me, so she can hear me like trying to breathe. And, you know, and a lot of times, you know, when like you're struggling to breathe, like you kind of get teary eyed or, you know, your face kind of swells up. So it's not something that can like easily be faked. So, you know, I hate that she has a front row seat to that, but at the same time, I'm fortunate that she does just because she knows, like, hey, I'm not fucking around. Like, you know, I'm really, like, I can't talk to a client right now. Like, I just need to, like, go outside, get my shit together, give me a half hour, I'll come back, I'll be good.
Yeah, like, and I'm actually looking for, there's this one particular thing, this one particular comic book where this woman was talking about depression of like what it was like when she ended up losing her daughter. And people don't realize that, like, this isn't necessarily always something that, like, you know, comes from like just having, like, you know, for the lack of a better term, something wrong with your brain or something wrong with your mind. A lot of things like this happen because, you know, traumatic issues kickstart these things, and like you just don't know what to do. And I'm trying to find the exact quote because what she said was, it was deep. She talked about drinking. Let's see if I can actually find the thing. I'm actually looking. Thank goodness for Marvel Unlimited. I swear to
Well, while you're looking for that, you know, there's one thing that there was a moment that I always liked from the Superman comic books. I think it was All-Star Superman, which was written by Grant Morrison and drawn by Frank Quietly. And I always appreciated this one bit where there was this girl on the cliff about to kill herself, and Superman flies up and, you know, he just says, like, hey, like, your doctor really did get held up, Reagan. Like, it's never as bad as it seems. You're much stronger than you think you are. Trust me. And he, like, gives her a hug, and I was like, man, that's... It's like one of my favorite comic book moments.
Well, it's a, I've never actually read the comic, but thankfully through Google, I've actually seen that entire panel. And I remember there was also the other one where this woman was going to commit suicide, and she was just like, "Don't touch me, don't save me." And he was like, "What do you want me to do?" And she was just like, "Just stand this, just leave me alone, and I'll talk when I'm ready to talk." And as time, they show time going on as like the sun was setting and then eventually just set. And he was talking to her, and he was saying how he had a friend who she was dying of cancer, and she ended up killing herself. And he was just like, you know, that was her decision, and I don't agree with it, but it was her decision. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for people to realize that what she was doing was a cry for help, like, you know what I mean? But everyone, sometimes instead of trying to fix somebody, sometimes you just need to sit and just be in the area. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you don't necessarily need someone to fix you. Sometimes you just need someone to, like, actually just be there. And all he did was sit there and was just there for it. And I remember you wrote something last year, the year before, about Daredevil going through his depression. I think he was fighting Purple Man.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Let's see if I can dig that up. Yeah.
But the thing about good writers, they leave you something to remember. And I remember you writing that, and I remember it actually made me want to go and read more about Daredevil, because I didn't know he had these issues with anger and depression. Well, I knew about the anger, but I didn't know he had these issues with, like, depression and, like, you know, and what is it they call it? His Catholic regret or something like that.
Oh,
like,
Catholic guilt.
Catholic guilt. And so, like, everything he did was just like, and I didn't know that, so. I also love the way comic books do that, and we're big comic book heads, and it's something we always talk about, like, you know, how a lot of the lessons they teach can actually be related to, like, everyday things. Like, people go, "Oh, well, it's just a comic book." I'm like, "Yeah, well, you get lessons from songs, you get lessons from TV, you get lessons from movies, you get lessons from books. Why can't a comic book not be the same thing?"
Right. No, and actually, excuse me, I actually found the article, and the opening line is, "Daredevil punched me in the feelings, and I cried with joy." I'm clearly still finding my legs as a writer. But yeah, no, it's, let's see here. Yeah, there's a quote from it, and this isn't my quote, this is written by Mark Waid from his Daredevil run. "Depression is a living thing. It exists by feeding on your darkest moods, and it is always hungry. Anything that challenges it, anything, it wants that thing to stop. Anything that makes you feel good, anyone who brings joy, it will drive away so it can grow without indifference. Sorry, it grows without interference. Its primary goal is to isolate you. At its worst, it will literally paralyze you rather than allow you to feel anything at all. At its worst, you are numb, you are drained, you are immobilized." And it's like, yeah, I feel like that sounds up pretty well for me. I mean, especially, like, immobilized. Because I was depressed not knowing I was depressed. I actually went to a doctor, and I was like, yeah, I can't eat, I can't sleep. I don't want to get out of bed, I don't want to do anything. And my doctor's like, "I think you're depressed." And I was like, "No, I think it's probably something that I ate." Or is it, well, how long has this been happening? About 4 months. Like, yeah, it's not something you ate, Paul. Like, and so, like, he was the one who was like, you know, maybe you should think about going into therapy. And we're thinking, well, you know, it's worth a shot. It's worth investigating. And the rest is history. But I remember just, you know, and this thing too with, you know, anxiety, you know, because kind of going back to what we were discussing earlier, I didn't know that it was a problem. because, you know, nobody would talk about it. So I kind of grew up thinking, oh, well, everyone feels this way, until there's a certain point when I realized, no, actually, this is something that I'm going through that sets me apart from everyone else. And then that's where the feelings of what's wrong with me, I'm not man enough, I don't fit in here, you know, I can't handle things where other people can, and it's such a shitty place to be, because you feel like there's nowhere to turn to.
Yeah, that's really the best way to say it. And that's actually a great, sometimes, and my wife says this all the time, and she's worked psyched for, like, before I met her, she worked psych for 6 years before she met me. So she understands what that's like. And she says she hates the way people use mental illness now like it's a cool thing. Like, people go, oh, I'm so depressed. And it's just like, are you? And it's almost insulting to even have to ask someone this question, but I'm pretty sure you've seen the people who say that, and you're like, don't belittle what the shit that I'm going through. You know what I mean?
You know, and I hate to say this, and this might seem, I can't even think of the best word for it, because, disclaimer, I'm white, but I feel like a lot of people that do this are white. Like, just from what I've seen, because now you have these movements like Gay Pride, Black Lives Matter, you know, it's a good moment in time where, you know, these minorities who have been neglected and confined and discriminated against can rise up and celebrate, or stand in defiance of what's happening, you know, with our law enforcement and politics. And now we have, like, you know, like gay pride parades, and you know, there's a lot going on, and I think that there are some people out there who feel disenfranchised, even though, come on, they aren't, and they never have been. Like, hey, well, you know, I want a parade. You know, I want to be different. I want a cross to bear. And it's like, shut up. Like, it drives me nuts. And granted, I know that probably makes it sound like a hypocrite because I'm white talking about anxiety. But I promise you, what I go through is real. And it's only because of having gone through all this shit that I can point out the fakers. I can point out the fakes. Like, I can point out people who are like, oh my god, I have depression because I got a C on my exam. And I'm like, no, that's not how that works. Or someone saying, oh man, I can never have anxiety because I never really care about anything that much. I'm like, no, not how it works. Like, you can be sad. Everybody feels sadness. Depression is another, I don't know, it's in another planet, another stratosphere. It's not, you know, being sad and being happy. It's, you know, being numb and just stuck. But yeah, so I think some people who you know, like, you know, like your wife was saying, that is cool to have mental illness. Like, I think it's those who feel like, you know, they want to stand up and you know, be different. I think it's like a weird white guilt thing. And I'm not saying that they're all white, but a majority of them are. And again, as your white correspondent.
I always have this thing where I was talking to the Remember to Hit Record podcast crew, and we were talking about it upsets me that people want to be black, and they want to put hip-hop on a pedestal. They want to talk about Biggie. They want to talk about Martin Luther King, they want to talk about Muhammad Ali, they want to talk about Malcolm X, they want to watch these movies, they want to, you know, promote all this stuff, until it's actually time to stand up and be accounted for. And then at that point, it's like, ooh, yeah, no. Yeah, it's like, oh, you're depressed. Like, if you're depressed, oh, go talk to someone. But I'm not that depressed. I'm like, then you're not depressed.
I mean, that really upsets me because, you know, these people who say, oh, I'm an ally. I'm like, you're only an ally when it's convenient. You know, like, you'd be like, I have black friends, and then, but, like, you're not gonna go, like, support them. Like, I mean, you can be the biggest social justice warrior on Facebook or Twitter, but when it comes down to what really matters, you know, it's, yeah. Where are they? I mean, like, I went to the Women's March in Denver, Colorado, and
which is awesome. Like, you stood up and you were accounted for.
Yeah. Like, and granted, awesome. Think about it. I'm a white male. Like, I really don't have anything to lose, like, at least in this scenario. Like, you know, to quote, you know, Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock, like, Lemon, he's a white man with hair. The sky's the limit. So, and you know, I hate to say it, I mean, it's so, you know, but I mean, because, you know, and, you know, my wife is biracial, so I feel like, you know, maybe, like, in the self-contained sense, you know, I don't have a lot to lose, but, you know, I'm married to a biracial woman, I want to start a family, my kids aren't going to be white, so I'm kind of fighting for the next, you know, generation. And it was so great that even though it was a women's march, that at one point, everyone started chanting Black Lives Matter, and I thought, this is great, because now we're throwing out all of the frustration and the indifference and everything that we're afraid of by this administration, and that was an empowering moment.
And I was just gonna say, like, and like, my wife is also biracial, so and something I'm pretty sure she has to deal with, same thing, something my wife has to deal with, when they talk about how, oh, you're just, like, he's like, oh, you're not really black. And it's like, oh, you're not really this. And it's like, my wife would always say how she wasn't black enough, quote unquote, for her black friends. It wasn't, quote unquote, white enough for her white friends. So she was like, where the fuck am I supposed to fit in? And I remember actually, like, there was someone I don't speak to anymore who was like, there they go taking all the good black men. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, he's like, oh, another mutt. I'm like, yep, I don't need to speak to you anymore. Like, I'm all set. Like, you're not going to disrespect my wife. Like, you know, well, not talking about my wife, my girlfriend, like that. Like, and it's a damn shame that, like, and I don't know if you ever heard of this movie called Loving.
Oh, I want to see it. It looks really, really good. It's about the first couple that fought to be, yes. It was the first mixed couple to fight for the right to get married.
Yes, it was exactly that. And I didn't even hear about this movie until my wife wanted to watch it in last week, and I watched it and I absolutely loved it. Hi, Angela.
Mark says hi.
So yeah, but no, it was just one of those things that, like, I just knew. We're about to hit the hour mark, and I didn't even realize how long we've been actually recording.
Because, I mean, hey, man, we're just good conversations, you know? You lose track of time. But this has been great, and I hope to return to the podcast again, and we can discuss this further.
Absolutely. And, well, next conversation may be about this, and maybe something deeper. Or, hey, we might finally have that Cyclops versus Wolverine conversation we've been having for the last 8 years.
Oh, yeah. I'm down for that. I am totally down for that.
Hey, before we get off, I'm going to have everyone do this. Can I get a damn it, Wade?
Oh, you want me to say that?
Yeah, just go, damn it, Wade.
Damn it, Wade.
And end recording. That was awesome.